I'm now speaking with Nagi Musa. He's a youth activist, co-founder of Girifna. He's now in Cairo, and he's also working closely with the Know Your Rights campaign. Hi, Nagi. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
I guess, can you just please introduce yourself, as well as the student movement and organization Girifna, and I guess you can also talk about the Know Your Rights campaign, just to give us an idea of what type of work you're doing at the moment.
Okay, my name, as you mentioned, Nagi Musa, and I'm 25 years old, and I'm a student now in the University of Khartoum. I was studying medicine before, but due to my activism, and I didn't have like this sustainable life, as you can imagine, in Sudan, for studying medicine there. So I'm now working, and I was working with Girifna movement in trying to raise the awareness of people about their civil rights, and they must stand up for their rights and to talk to people about what is nonviolence direct action is, and like that. And also, we established this new movement, which is the Know Your Rights campaign, and also it is like Girifna, but it is focusing more on civil rights and about the constitution. And there must be a new constitution in Sudan, and we are working in trying with people as in a grassroots level that they must they must be part of this new institution, in kind of to participate in the process of having of this new institution.
Yeah. So you're currently in Cairo. You've been there for just a couple of days, but you're, as you said, you were a student at University of Khartoum. So you live in Khartoum, Sudan. Is that right?
Yes, I live in Omdurman city, which is inside the state of Khartoum.
Oh yeah, it's right. It's across the river, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly, yeah.
So I guess what drew my attention to you today, as I was on Facebook, and there was a regular stream of images and discussions of arrests and injuries of recent protests in Khartoum, and in Quebec at the moment there is a large student social movement that's been, I guess, fairly active and on strike since the end of February and early March of this year. And we've had over 300 demonstrations, several each day, and there's a regular demonstration each night. And there's been a monthly demonstration on the 22nd of every month where we've had up to 300,000 people marching on the streets, and it's drawn an interest not only to look inward in our own situation, but also look at other student movements worldwide. And there are student actions, a lot of them taking place in Chile right now, for example, but there's very little information about the student movement in Sudan. So I thought this would be a good moment to talk about it, because it seems as though it's particularly active right now. As far as I understand it, you said that Girifna was started 3 years ago, and you're one of the co-founders. If I remember, was it started to discuss democracy and even to discuss the changing of the government of Sudan in order to make it more interesting for the two Sudans now to remain together before the referendum? Is this correct, or can you elaborate on, I guess, the founding of Girifna and how it got started and why initially?
Yeah, actually, we were like three guys sitting together, and we were talking about it was just 2 days before the registration phase, which is the first phase in the election. It was going to start like a couple of days of our this chatting together, and we said to ourselves, like where is the political parties, where is the opposition parties must start work for this election, because since the CPA, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, was signed, we were looking for this election as it was a chance for us to have a peaceful change in Sudan. When the election came, the political parties was away and the civil society was not working enough for the election. So we said to ourselves, let's start and let's us work from there, and we should move on and not just wait for the political parties or this older generation to tell us what to do. We as youth, we need to start walking. And actually, it was a lot of people came to and joined us in Wifna to talk to, and it was at the beginning it was about changing the government by through election, okay? And of course, we saw that a lot of our members were arrested, and some of them were beaten, and some of them were tortured inside the security places. And we were just calling people to not to vote for the NCP.
Mm-hmm.
And we were tortured for them. So, and the election, when it came, it was complete, like there is the political parties were like withdrawn from it, and the SPLM, it was like an agreement between the NCP and SPLM, like they will have the referendum to have succession or separate, and to let the NCP to win, maybe. And so after the election, we all gathered together, and we decided to continue what we started and not to give up.
So I guess just to add a bit of context, so the elections that you were talking about when Garifna got started during the registration process, those were the first so-called democratic elections in Sudan in a very long time. Is that correct?
Actually, no, because we did have more democratic elections before, because before Omar al-Bashir,
mm-hmm.
before the NCP, we did have a democracy, and Sudan did have actually two revolutions, peaceful revolutions, just like the Arab Spring, and in the past, and after each one of the one of it, we did have a democracy, but it was not it didn't like continue, because then the part of the army will withdraw and take and stop the democracy.
So were they the first elections or democratic elections since the coup and the, I guess, since the Omar al-Bashir took power?
Yeah.
Took power.
Yeah.
Okay.
First democracy since 89.
89.
Yeah.
So I guess there was a lack of experience in the democratic process.
And actually, but also it was not like that. It was not a free and fair election. Actually, there was a fraud. You have the government cars and vehicles working for the NCP. They are putting the pictures of the candidate of the NCP on the vehicles that's owned by the government. They are using the government building. They are using the security and the police. If you walk on, you'll find one of the police wearing uniform and also putting a picture on his uniform for Omar al-Bashir, and he's the candidate for the NCP. So it was not a free and fair election, actually. Also, they were crushing us. They were torturing and beating anything. Like, if you were against this candidate, you would be arrested.
Can you describe some of the actions that Garifna did when it first got started during this period? What type of things did you do as a group?
We did a lot of things. The first, one of our first activities was like distributing pamphlets. We did distribute a lot of pamphlets, talking with the people on the streets with a small language that they can understand and they can feel linked to it and like that. And also we did participate in some rallies And also we did public events, and we did talk to people on the markets. We have a group of youth. They went to different markets and bus stations and started talking to the people. And you can find a lot of videos about our activities on YouTube, actually, and in our website.
So you're quite active on various fronts at the beginning, when you first got started during the election process.
Yeah, and actually after the election also, we have a lot of people active, and we did have we are talking to people in the market. I was actually 4 months ago, I was arrested during one of the activities, and then I was arrested again 2 months or 3 months ago, I think. Yeah. So we still there. We're still working strongly.
How did Garifuna change after the election? Let's say between the election period and the referendum. Was this a different phase, or did you change strategies, or what was different for the movement at that time?
Of course, after the election and the withdrawal of the different opposition parties and the understanding it was not free and a fair election and like that, we were a little bit disappointed, and also the atmosphere is that the people was disappointed from the political process, and also the environment it changed, you know. Before the election, they were afraid a little from the international media and monitoring organization from outside, and if they arrested someone, some of the activists before the election, they will let him out in hours or one day and like that, you know. We found it ourselves after the election, if they arrested some of our members, it will take a lot of time to let him out, and also you will find little response from the international media and the organization, as Sudan is not now the news, you know, after the election.
And I guess the news that was coming out of Sudan was more focused on the south than on the north. The north was largely ignored during that period.
Yeah, we did focus also before the referendum. We found it ourselves the referendum is coming and maybe a war can start again. So we did focus on social peace, and we did actually establish and founded this youth forum for social peace, and we have and there is a lot of youth organizations and different small groups part of this youth forum for social peace, and we did a lot of activities talking to the people on the street and also working on grassroots level, working for to respect the choice of people in southern Sudan, whether they want a united Sudan or to separate. We should respect their choice, and we should look to the roots of the problem. There is racism, there is tribalism in Sudan, and we need to start changing the way we look to each other as Sudanese. And we did a lot of activities. Until now, the Youth Forum for Social Peace is working in South and in North. And one of our great activities was sending this group of our activists. It was the reconciliation convoy. We sent some of the stuff we collected from people from north of Sudan in Khartoum. And with a group of our youth, went to the south just 2 days before the separation, you know, to a small town called Trulay, which is the town of the late basketball legend Manute Paul. So, and because he was also one of the guys working for reconciliation and for all of Sudanese people in north and south should live together in peace and like that. So they went there and they participated in helping and working and interacting with the youth in the south, and we were part of the celebration of the celebrations in Juba city for celebration of the independence of South Sudan, and I think it was very important to join them. Yeah.
So I guess between the referendum and independence, you were, I guess, more focused on reconciliation issues and the like. So was this also Garifuna during this time?
It was Garifuna, and also it was Youth Forum for Social.
Okay. So after the referendum and after independence, how did Garifuna evolve, or what became its priorities at that time? On July 9th, 2012, in about a week and a half, or 2 weeks, I suppose, it'll be the 1 year anniversary of the independence of South Sudan and the separation of Sudan into two independent states. So I guess in the past year, how has Garifuna as a student movement, student organization of youth activists, how has it changed, and what are its priorities now?
Of course, the first priority of us since we started in Garifuna is to stop and to put an end to this dictatorship of Omar al-Bashir and the NCP, you know?
Yes.
This is our first priority. Like, during our work for reconciliation and social peace issues, we find the NCP is one of the main causes for these social problems we have, because they are using tribes to kill other tribes, and they are using religion to kill other religions, you know? So to end these social problems, we need first to stop this government, and to have a new government to put a new constitution that all of the people feel that they belong to this country, and they are in the same level and equal and like that, you know? So now we are working like we were doing different activities, you know. And as I mentioned, we did have different. We did talk to the people on the streets. We did distribute pamphlets, and we did have public events. And a lot of our members were arrested. And also me, I was arrested the last.
I guess since separation, the economic situation in Sudan has become more difficult. Has life become more difficult on a day-to-day basis for you and for, I guess, the population in general? And if so, how has that affected the Garifuna movement? Have people become more been able to relate more to Garifuna and have joined it or participated more closely with it? Or has it become something that's people are more fearsome of joining it because of repression?
Actually, the economical situation now is very bad in Sudan, and it's like the transportation double, the prices of sugar, the prices of food, it's very high now. And that is why you find a lot of demonstrations these days in Sudan. And actually, Garifuna, we are not telling people to be member of Garifuna. Garifuna does not have like a membership,
right,
or something like that. But we are telling the people to stand up for their rights. Whether if you want to stand and say you are Garifuna and you are fed up of this government, or you can say whatever name you mentioned, but you have to stand for your rights, you know. And from the way I see it now, a lot of people, most of the people I know now, they are fed up of this situation and the government lying to them. Because before the separation, the government was saying like south of Sudan is causing more economical problems for the north than helping the north, and also like we in the north, like we will not suffer from the separation, and we have oil in the north and we have gold and these kind of stuff. But it was just talk, it was like lies from Omar al-Bashir and his regime. And now the people, like they can't find food, so they are like they are not losing anything by demonstrating and standing against this government, because they don't have anything.
The reason that I decided to call you today is because on Facebook, I was beginning to see a regular stream from the Garifuna feed, or from the Garifuna page, of demonstrators in a Khartoum hospital who are students from University of Khartoum who are injured, and I began reading some of the comments, and they were saying things like, you know, the students are injured, but that they need to, that the doctors need to express solidarity with the students by not giving them up to the security forces who are going to the hospitals in order to catch the demonstrators, for example. I guess before we talk about, let's say, the situation in the hospitals and the relationship between injured demonstrators, the police, and doctors, can you, I guess, talk more a bit about why are there demonstrations right now? Like, why are people on the streets today, for example?
It's a continuation for what have started like more than a week ago. People actually started in the University of Khartoum by one of the boarding houses, a girl boarding houses, was like, they did demonstrate against the raise of the prices inside of the boarding houses. So the security dealt with them badly, and they did like tear gas them and like that and beat them. And it started there in the University of Khartoum. Next day, the students were in the streets saying like, police should not beat them, because they are saying the economic situation is bad, you know. And the police and the security, of course, they don't want anyone on the streets. And they are using, there is the police, and there is also different kind of militias or gangs that's used by the NCP to beat the students and to beat the people, you know. It is not just universities now. There's different neighborhoods in Omdurman, in Khartoum, in Al-Lubayd, in Port Sudan, in different areas in Sudan demonstrating. And also the security and police are dealing with them badly.
Mm-hmm. Is this predominantly a student movement, or is it led by the students who are the first ones out, who are protesting against the increases at the boarding houses? That has encouraged others to join them, or is it still only students? What's the relationship between the students and the larger society?
It's not only students now. There is different sectors in the Sudanese society are protesting. Actually, all of the people are suffering from the raise of the prices. But as you know, maybe in Sudan and in worldwide, the students are always in front. You know, they are more like active, and they are more courage to stand for their rights, and they are more connected and organized and like that. I think it's the same case in the different countries.
In Quebec, where the students started to strike because of tuition increases, so it started off as a student strike movement. And then it got much bigger when the government instituted a law against freedom of association, freedom of movement in the streets, etc. And I guess I have one question for you before we end. Some people are saying, why are we demonstrating here in Canada when things are so well? You know, if you compare to other countries, for example, a country like Egypt or Sudan or elsewhere, that we shouldn't complain. We often respond as striking students is that we don't need to wait for it to get very bad before we need to protest. We need to protest constantly in order to always improve things. So what would you add to that discussion?
I will add like also things always can get better, you know, and we need always to push to get to the better place. And one of the things that NCP and our dictator saying to us, like, if you went back 100 years Sudan, you will find nothing. Like, we Sudan now is better, you should not demonstrate, because 100 years it was worse than that. And we are saying that does not mean we should say, okay, that's enough for us and it's very perfect for us. No, we should always push for the better. And so I think whether in Canada or in the United States or France, any place, people must always keep moving to have a better situation in kind of social justice and in human rights issues and like that.
And I guess even within Canada, because Quebec is one province, that has the lowest tuition fees in all of Canada. And people outside of Quebec, you know, they say, why are we complaining? We have the lowest fees in Quebec, that we're actually lucky. And we always go back and remind them is that they are the lowest fees in Canada because students haven't allowed the fees to go up. We want accessible education. Well, thanks a lot, Nagi Moussa, for taking the time to talk with me today. I know it's late in Cairo right now, but do you have anything to add that you haven't been able to tell me about Garifna, about the student movement, or about the situation in Sudan at the moment?
The situation is developing now in Sudan, and we hope and I send this message to the students in Quebec and to the people in Quebec and to stand up with us and to remember us as we are fighting this dictator who does not care about our rights, and he did kill a lot of us, and they can. And he can torture and kill us. And actually now a lot of people are arrested in Sudan, and we don't know what's the upcoming days, what is going to happen. So we are all humans, and we are all have to stand with each other and help each other and stop the bad people from destroying our world. Yeah.
Indeed. Well, thanks again, and know that the students in Quebec are in solidarity with your struggle, student struggle in Sudan as well.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay, thank you.